Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services. Our panelists today are Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services out of Bloomington, Illinois, Bill Mayer of Roach Ag Commodities out of Lexington, Illinois, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities from Champaign, Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's open today's discussion with this question. Dale, you're holding a large portion of the 05 corn crop in storage. What do you do, if anything, to protect it?
Well, that's probably a big question a lot of people out there want to answer, because not only have they seen the board give up now, but everybody's starting to really talk about how the cash basis is giving up on corn. And, you know, you're really kind of behind the eight ball at this juncture, and I guess at this, you've held it this long. You know, you've been playing a game of hold and hope, and right now maybe you play the game for another week or two. We could get a possible cycle low in here on a seven-week cycle pretty quickly. And you play to see if there's a little weather pop here around the 4th of July or something to go ahead and move that stuff. But otherwise, there isn't much you can do strategy-wise with the old crop corn.
Before we get to the other two, when does that corn actually have to come out? It'll probably have to come out at some point because it's still under loan, maybe. Is that right?
No, there isn't a lot of corn under loan. You know, actually, if you look in the statistics, most of the corn last year was LDP'd. So either farmers own it outright, or I suspect country elevators own a lot that's still hedged at this juncture. So I think it's going to come to market somewhere between, or at least a good part of it, between now and the end of summer.
Dale Durkles, of course, with AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. And Clayton Pope, you've got that corn in the bin, and you've got to do something with it. What are you going to do?
Well, unless you're prepared to hold on to it for a real long time and take advantage of the carry in the market and just consider it more new crop, which I certainly wouldn't recommend. I think you just pull the plug and get rid of it. And if you still want to hope for the upside here, because obviously anything can happen. It's just such a two-edged sword at this point. I'd prefer to be a buyer of some what are now very cheap calls rather than holding the cash anymore, because like what Dale said, there's still a lot more downside potential in the basis as well.
And Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Marketing?
Well, I would agree with these guys. I think you could look at the possibility of getting some kind of a up move within the next 2 weeks, but I think you have to have some kind of time frame on there. You have to have some kind of target set. You don't want to be unrealistic in your goals. If I would agree with what Clayton said, if you want to hold on to it for a while and go out and hedge it into the new crop, that would be a possibility.
Does everybody think that USDA's planting intentions reported 78 million acres for corn when it came out on March 31st was too low? And is everybody more in agreement with Informa's numbers, which said 80.3 million, Dale?
I think when the trade saw it on the last day of March, they all thought it was too low at that point, and I think they immediately dialed up acres, especially when the market rallied so quickly right after that. Although I do, and you know, when you look at Informa's talking about a 2.5 million acre pop compared to the USDA, I think the trade's probably not there. I think they're somewhere between 1.5, maybe a few up around 2, but I'm going to settle out at around 1.5 to where the bulk of the people are probably at.
Well, my feeling is that it seems like over the years, and I've been at this a long time, as these two guys have too, it seems like if something comes out from USDA and it just seems totally incredulous or preposterous, when the dust settles, they usually stick to their guns and it ends up not looking so preposterous. So, no, I certainly wouldn't go and embrace the Informa number over the USDA number. If anything, I guess I'd be tempted to think that the number is going to be closer to USDA.
I guess I'd say I think I would agree with the Informa number, that 80 million acre. I think that's probably pretty close. But I have to realize that I may be biased by looking out my back door somewhat, and I think there's definitely more acres in Illinois, but I'm not sure in some of the outlying states like the Dakotas and that where they may be. So I don't think you want to depend on that.
You know, one thing I do know, Todd, that all of us realize. The statistically, when you just look at the USDA's reports and the methodology, their June acreage, their June reports are all bigger reports. The June acreage report's a bigger survey. Also, there's some more other things they do with that report that it's a statistically more accurate report on a year like this, especially where planting went so fast. So, you know, just by nature of bigger statistical error with the March numbers, you can get a change there too.
What if they're closer to right than they are to wrong at this point? What happens in the corn market?
You should have bought it the day before.
Well, there you go. We can just shut down right now, right? Okay. Next report, by the way, I'll do with that acreage report is due out on June the 30th. Bill, will July futures push to the December low of 221 and a quarter?
I guess I feel like there's some pretty good support down here in this 230 area. I wouldn't rule out that they could do that, but it just looks to me like we could have some explosiveness here in the next 2 to 3 weeks as we move into that report, that 4th of July weekend, you know, pollination period and weather. Weather's going to be the key to it.
And then I want to go all the way out to the fall and talk a little bit about LDP as well. We've touched on this before, and a lot of people have said, no, I don't think there will be an LDP. I heard this week at least once that, yeah, they've changed their mind, that maybe an LDP will show up for the corn and certainly for the soybeans. What do you think, Bill?
Well, of course, let's look at that 80 million acre number and look at 100 and I think trends somewhere in the mid 150s, 154, 155. You could end up with a 1.7 billion, a 1.8 billion carryout. Yeah, I think that could push you down to levels that you could get an LDP.
You know what? One thing I'd have to say here, and you know, people need to hearken back. They need to forget last year's experience to a certain degree on LDPs. We're not going to see anything near like that. I'd also take them back into some years earlier into 2000 and even in the late 90s when we had some big crops and we certainly had some carryout numbers that maybe not quite here, but not a lot different than here. We didn't have much of an LDP on corn, and the market seemed to get down and maybe offer you something that was 10, 12 cents, maybe a little more than that at the largest, but really not a big LDP. So I don't know that we're going to see it this time around. We might see one, but it's going to be a small one if we do.
By the way, the numbers like this from the Chicago Board of Trade for the week, July corn had a high this week of 251 and a quarter. They're low at 232, settlement price at 235 and a half. They were off 6.5 cents from last week. December futures at 261 and a quarter were off 6.5. July oats at 196 and a half on the grains floor were up a dime. And the July wheat, a 359 settlement price, off 13.5 cents. They had a range of 379.5 to 358. And the September contract there at 376 and three quarters were off 12 and a quarter for the week. Tell me about the corn market action for the week as you followed it. What did you find most notable?
Well, I guess the funds all along here have had such opportunities to sell like, en masse, and most of the time they just haven't done it. Now, this week, I guess what stood out to me the most was they finally did, although amazingly, just the sheer amount they're still long is kind of mind-boggling when you think about it. I mean, at their peak long, this isn't even counting the index funds, but just the commodity funds that are visible on the CFTC reports, they're probably long, 275,000 contracts or something. And I would guess now they're long maybe 210,000. So they've only sold like, you know, maybe 50, 60,000 contracts. And in this last 2 or 3 weeks, this market's broken 30 cents in the nearby. So there's just so many big ifs ahead of us. I mean, I think it's entirely possible in the next month or so. I think corn could break 40 cents or rally 40 cents. And as much as people were sort of disgruntled or confused by a period there where it seems like fundamentals didn't matter, I don't think there's any question that in the next 4 to 6 weeks fundamentals will matter, and they'll matter greatly.
Dale, do you think farmers will make more money this year on their corn crop than they did last year or not?
Gross per acre?
Yep.
Depends on the yield. You know, that's
Under normal conditions.
Boy, a lot of people last year, when you look at the LDP records, you know, they took that half a buck out of the chute last fall. And, you know, there's some people, if they did a reasonable job marketing here, if they had it pre-sold, you know, a good part of it, you know, they made some pretty good gross dollars per acre if they would have had, you know, a respectable yield to work with. This year, you know, on balance, you would say it's going to be kind of hard to replicate that because we can't replicate the LDP. But, you know, the big unknown we got in this mix this year is still everything that's going on in the outside markets and the emotion those markets can bring back into the corn market. You know, and there are a lot of people out there that are really very sensitive to the fact that grains, no matter the fundamentals, are still cheap relative to other things. In fact, it was early this week or right at the end of last week, one of the managing directors of Goldman Sachs said, you know, the next big boom in the commodity industry is probably going to be in agriculturals because they're undervalued. You know, and you know, when you see things like that, it kind of clicks a light on because you're sitting here understanding this is being said by a man that works for a firm that has the single biggest commodity index fund, and there's still a lot of money that can come into this business from that sector. So there's just so many unknowns with the outside that it's really hard to answer that question.
I want to stay with the corn, but I want to go to a different area. On Mondays, we talk with Chesapeake Energy folks on the weather segment, Mark Russo. Chesapeake Energy follows natural gas in particular, Mark telling us that natural gas supplies are large at this point, big. So my question is, do farmers need to look in at their anhydrous needs for this fall and think about that at this point? And what are you hearing on anhydrous prices?
I think the answer is yes, and I think that at least discussing that with my customers, there's some of them that have done that, especially the ones that have been out there aggressively looking at locking in 2007 prices. Part of my recommendation is if you're going to do that, you better look at the input side of it and see what you can get done on that side. And right now it's hard to get that done at a local dealer, but there is some out there that are willing to talk.
Well, you know, the one thing, and, you know, I haven't talked to too many people here in just the last couple of weeks about this, but I know as you got back into the end of May, there were some fertilizer dealers out there scratching their heads with anhydrous in their tanks that was high-priced and nobody particularly wanted it. You know, you have to be at this point, I think, still kind of selective on what you're willing to pay. You know, I wouldn't pay any of these elevated prices that we had thrown around at us here back in the winter or maybe in the very end of last fall. I think you can find something. Yeah, it's still going to be expensive compared to what you were two, 3 years ago, but, you know, it may not be silly. 7 cent ammonia at this point would still argue, you know, ballparkish, I want to say somewhere in the ballpark of maybe $400, give or take, on an ammonia price. It's going to be higher than what you're used to, but I would concur with what Bill said. You know, these people that are locking in 07 stuff in terms of corn sales, yeah, they need to be thinking about their input side, too. You don't want to let that get away.
Let's turn our attention to the soybean market. July soybeans finished with a high this week at 605, the low at 589. Settlement price at $6.25. They were up 14.5 from last week. The nose with 627 were up 11.5 from last week. As you take a look at the bean market, it appears that this market historically remains in the bottom part of the long-term trading range. How much of an upside potential might be there, in your opinion, as we go through the fall?
I don't think there's a whole lot right now unless corn kind of reverses itself, takes the lead, and heads up. I just don't think bean prices a whole lot higher than here can happen without corn leading the way.
Everybody agree with that?
I guess I would feel the same way, assuming normal weather. We've been in this 550 to 610 range on nearby futures forever, and I don't see any reason to get out of that range other than maybe a dip in and out once in a while.
You know, the one interesting thing you can look back at over the last few months here in the soybean complex, you know, and everybody's been worried about big supplies, you know, and we had that carryout estimate from the USDA at the beginning of May. Wasn't a surprise for the new crop, but still a big number, you know, looking out into next year. And it's interesting, you know, you go back here, you know, last winter and everybody was looking at fundamental numbers going, you know, how can we not see soybean prices down to $5 or under $5, and we never even deigned to want to do that at all. And it looks like maybe we've kind of redefined here at this point. When you have heavy supplies, maybe what a cheap price for soybeans is, you know, and it's a little bit higher than what people used to think, too.
When you take a look at the numbers this week from Informa as they came out, 74.4 million bushels or 74.4 million acres is their estimate. The USDA March estimate at 76.9, so they're down 2.5 million. Sound right to you?
you know, it's you know, it all depends on how you want to read the switch out that people want to think from beans into corn and how they want to read that, you know, because there's really kind of a balance between beans and corn there. You can throw some spring wheat into the mix, too. If I think that informant corn acreage number is too large, that means I think that their bean acreage number probably is too small.
I agree. I think that you have to go back to one thing you have to do is go back to when the report was surveyed, which was the end of February, and look to, you know, the actual start of planting. There was quite a change there from a price standpoint. And I think the market, the farmer reacted to that.
In a moment, we'll talk with Steve Freed of ADM Investor Services.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A cool, dry start to the week gradually transitioned to weather more typical of early summer in Illinois. We started out this week with temperatures running about 10 to 15 degrees below normal as a cold high-pressure system settled in over the Midwest. High temperatures early in the week in the upper 60s and low 70s finally reached the mid and upper 80s by Thursday, just a bit above normal. Low dew points during the week allowed overnight temperatures to drop into the 50s, making for cool, comfortable nights. Dew points did start to rise on Thursday as more humid air began to make its way into Illinois. Rainfall has been well below normal across Illinois this week, amounting only to a few hundredths from light showers for most locations across the state. There were slightly higher amounts in the eastern part of Illinois. Very warm and humid weather will mark the start of the third full week of June. Additional moisture and heat, combined with some weak upper-level disturbances, will lead to the development of scattered showers and thunderstorms throughout the state over this weekend through Monday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms are possible again in northern and central Illinois late in the week. Temperatures next week will average near to perhaps slightly above normal, with highs generally in the mid-80s and lows in the 60s. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists today, Bill Mayer, Rochag Commodities out of Lexington, Illinois, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities from Champaign, Illinois, and Dale Durkles of AgriVisor Services in Bloomington, Illinois. Recapping the numbers from the Mercantile Exchange for the week, June live cattle this week had a high of 81.80. Their low at 77.50, a settlement price there at 81.65. They were up $3.12.5 from last week's settlement price. The August feeder cattle at 112.57.5 were up 267.5. Lean hogs June contract 76.10, the high. The low at $73. They settled 252.5 higher at 75.47.5. And the bellies at 95.65 were $8.55 higher by the end of trade this week. Joining us now from Chicago, Illinois, is, I believe, 26-year veteran of the commodity markets and the director of research for ADM Investor Services, Steve Freed. Good afternoon to you, Steve. Thanks for joining us.
Good afternoon.
Tell me, if you could, would you invest your own money in a just-announced farmer-owned ethanol plant? Why or why not?
Wow, you start with the tough questions first, don't you? you know, I think that to this point, ethanol has been a very good investment for investors. And you watch all of the articles that are on the news, and it seems like investors are more readily available right now for the ethanol. It seems to be kind of a buzzword in the marketplace. I think that you know, when we got close to $80 crude oil, I think things started happening worldwide with economies slowing down and talk about alternative fuels or even kind of bringing back, lowering some of the demand issues. And so, you know, you're going to have something perhaps different happen than what's happened to this point to get crude much higher than the recent highs. And there's even talk about settling back into maybe a lower price range over the next few years, maybe $50 to $60 a barrel. If we get some refinery capacity added in Saudi Arabia, and if globally everybody kind of slows down a little bit on the economy. The price of corn, you know, when it's $1.80, cash at a $1.50, I mean, that's really great. But when you start looking at the potential need for good crops over the next 2 or 3 years, we might be in a period where corn is at higher lows and potentially higher highs depending upon supply. And so all of a sudden, down the road, maybe the margins are not going to be quite as good as they have been to this point. So it's, I think it's still a good investment, but you just have to make sure that you have the right construction and that you don't necessarily have to build a Cadillac plant and make sure that you're in an area where there's plenty of corn and the availability of selling out the feed byproduct is there and kind of do your homework before you invest.
I'll take your answer as a no, potentially. Don't need to go any further than that. And I have another question for you then. You have a PowerPoint that I found online. It's titled Globalization Ready to Rock the Commodity World. And you talk about it several different things, but I want you to discuss for us very quickly Chinese hog production as it works into the global marketplace for corn and beans.
Well, I think that when you read wires from the China, it talks about two separate issues. Number one is their economy continues to grow, and you also continue to see demand for meat, especially in hogs, continue to grow, and that's a very positive thing for world protein demand and their soybean imports. The other issue that you tend to see is that there's a lot of financial questions in China. If they can continue to float their currency, and can the world continue to allow them to use as much commodities as they have to this point? So I think that their domestic meat demand will continue to grow. There aren't too many Chinese that feel their economy is not going to grow at least by 7% on a quarterly basis, and I think that's positive long-term to feed demand and the potential for them to be less active in the corn export market and maybe help U.S. corn exports down the road. So I think China is still a positive feature in global demand for food and feed.
You know, Steve, on another tack, talking about China, which kind of integrates in here, you know, Todd asked you a hard question about building an ethanol plant here, and the Chinese, you know, have kind of looked at the same situation because they are so dependent upon energy imports. Do you think there's going to be a move afoot over there to really ramp up ethanol production in China, which also could impact the world mix and trade in corn?
There were some studies out this week that they're definitely going to increase ethanol production. I think that their increase is not the magnitude of what we're seeing like in Europe with the biodiesel market and the potential here in the United States with ethanol and down the road biodiesel. It's just I don't think they have as many automobiles and I think it's slowly increasing but I do think that recently they bought 50,000 tons of corn and there's rumors that they may have bought another two cargoes of U.S. corn and talked at that maybe there's import licenses for as much as 1 million tons of corn, and all this corn is going to the ethanol market. So I think that if you want to find one or two or three reasons why we were at contract highs back in the middle of May, one of them was that the Chinese started coming in and buying corn, and I think that will be a positive feature for the markets down the road.
Yeah, Steve, I'd like to hear you address the question of, in the next year or two, with all this ethanol demand growing, just how that acreage switch is likely to come about, or at least the needed acreage increase in corn. I mean, do you think it's all mostly going to come at the expense of beans, or are we somehow going to find new acres somewhere, or how would you answer that?
I think on paper it was going to work out in that Brazil was going to increase their bean production at the expense of U.S. bean acres, and we were going to increase our corn acres. Certainly, we've had a lot of issues in Brazil this year with their farm crisis and financial crisis, and there's even talk that next year their acres may come down if their currency doesn't decline or if their profitability doesn't improve. So we have wheat acres here in the United States at like 30-year lows, and a lot of those acres have gone to soybeans, It's kind of one of those interesting situations that down the road we may need both. Now, if you believe the seed companies and they talk about the varieties, they believe that by 2010, 4 years from now, that we'll have a 14 billion bushel corn crop just because of yield. And so, you know, on one hand, you say, okay, we need 84 million acres of corn. But on the other hand, if we have a 190 U.S. yield, we really don't need that much acres. So I think a lot of it depends in the next few years on the weather and how much supply we have to deal with. And then a lot of it has to do with, you know, the ethanol industry and if it continues to grow or if it kind of levels off.
Going back to the China thing, Steve, as you look, I mean, kind of what I heard you say there is that China was going to cut back on exports probably and possibly even import some. Have we taken that, has the USDA taken that into consideration on their export projections for 06, 07 enough, do you think?
I think that, we've been waiting for quite a few years for China to become a net importer of corn, and so far they've been reluctant. And part of that probably has to do with just drawing down their stocks and fact that they certainly have more excess corn in the northern growing areas and versus the needs in the south, and so they ship out the extra corn out of the north. I think that you could make the case down the road that they will not be as big of an exporter. I don't know if it's 06, 07, but they have some of the similar problems that we have in the United States with urban sprawl. Their yields are not quite as good as ours. A lot of their crops are irrigated. They're having some of the same issues with aquifers. And right now, East Central China is in the middle of a drought. And so it's one of those things where I think from 96, they understand the impact that they would have on global prices if they become a net buyer. I think they want to remain as self-sufficient as they possibly can, but the numbers just work out that down the road they'll probably not be exporting corn, and you'll probably see them as a net buyer of corn. If you look at the export sales every week, we're always selling more corn than we think, and we're not shipping that much corn. And I think it's a lot of the South Koreans and things like that building a book in corn, just in case China's not an exporter in 06, 07.
Steve, we appreciate you being with us. Steve Fried is with ADM Investor Services. Now a final note from our panelists. We'll start with you, Dale Dirkles.
Just don't fall asleep and forget about those outside markets. I don't know that story's all done yet.
And we'll get a word from you, too, as well.
Okay. Well, it's that crazy time of year where the fat lady might be humming here in the corn market if we do avoid a serious weather problem. So it makes marketing all the more difficult than ever. So I think it's an excellent time to learn how to use the options and the various tools that are available to you out there.
Clayton Pope, of course, with Clayton Pope Commodities. Bill Mayer, Roach Ag Commodities.
I would second that, and we could see some real volatility, I believe, over the next 3 or 4 weeks. Don't let it sway you from your plan. Stick with it and execute it.
That's this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com. And with support from ADM, looking to nature for discoveries in food, feed, and fuel. ADM, resourceful by nature.